be at the mercy of whatever reality we happen to jump to.
The battle suits can withstand antagonistic environments.
Only as long as their fuel lasts.
Believe me, Dredda, it's not as dire as it seems if you understand the nature and depth of the parallels between realities. The conformities from one universe to the next are very close, or we couldn't travel between them. The corridor wouldn't hold up. Interdimensional vibration would tear it apart. The bottom line here is, no matter where you jump using this technology, you can expect to find an oxygen atmosphere, a single sun, and a Class M planet of the same relative age. The details of each environment may be very different, but the general features have to be the same.
I need a time frame. How long do we have before we have to leave?
There's no margin for safety. And this is just an educated guess, but based on the organism's generation time, I'd say 6 hours. Tops.
Dredda refused to sag under the weight of that terrible news.
Nero.
Yes?
We have to have hard numbers on the nuke fuel we currently have on hand, and a solid estimate on how much more we can extract from Ground Zero and process in the next 6 hours. We need fuel to power the jump, and we need fuel to use after the jump. The amount of fuel's going to determine who and what goes with us.
I'll get right on it.
Before you do that, send the word to the troopers of the mines. There's no tomorrow. Work the slaves until they drop dead. I am authorizing the execution of slackers at their discretion. I want every ounce of ore they can wring out of them.
There he is.
Ryan saw Jack burst out of the gloom at the end of the tunnel. The muty albino was sprinting for all he was worth. A second later, the reason became clear. Behind Jack, at the edge of the range of the Klieg lights, a trooper skidded to a stop. As he raised his pulse rifle and fired, someone deeper in the shaft let out a shout.
Look out! Let's...
Jack managed to twist away from the green beam. It didn't wink out, but like a 150-foot-long saber slashed across the width of the tunnel at belly height. Before it could touch him, Jack dove for the floor. As it swept over his head, he rolled and came up on the balls of his feet, and he came up running. The laser shot swung wide, and as the beam grazed the side of the far wall, it gouged a long, dripping channel in the glass. As fast and agile as Jack was, it wasn't the kind of game he could keep on winning. Clad in the stolen battle suit, Ryan moved away from the interior wall, waving his arms at the kneeling trooper. He had no EM protection because the suit was out of fuel. If the guy saw through the disguise, Ryan was a goner. The trooper stopped firing. Ryan grabbed Jack by the shoulder as he rushed past, using the lighter man's speed to twist him around and down.
Fuck!
As the soldier trotted toward them, Ryan absorbed a flurry of punches and kicks from the albino. The battle suit soaked up most, but not all of the impacts. The kicks made Ryan feel like a pebble being shaken inside a tin can.
Hey, damn it, boy, it's me!
He pinned Jack to the floor with a knee in the small of his back. The effort was making him puff, which in turn was making his visor fog up. He needed more air holes.
You're not online.
The trooper stepped up to Ryan.
Something's wrong with your battlesuit. A malfunction in the comlink.
Ryan pointed a gauntleted thumb at his crotch.
You're out of fuel?
Ryan didn't have to gesture an affirmative. JB, Dean, Doc, and Mildred rushed around the fork of the tunnel.
Yeah! What the...
They gang-tackled the trooper, knocking him off his feet and crashing him helmet first against the wall. Before he could recover, they had hold of his arms and legs and were dragging him to the floor. Once he was face down, they sat on him to make sure he stayed that way.
That was too fucking easy.
The draining of the battlesuit's fuel went even more smoothly the second time. JB jammed the bone blade under the armor plate and gave a savage twist. As the fuel gushed out onto the floor, Mildred unlocked the helmet, and she and Doc screwed it off. Fresh air and the reek of nuke fuel brought the trooper to his senses. He started to struggle.
Help! Help!
You're wasting your breath.
Help! Somebody help me!
Nobody's coming, pal.
Help!
Now you know how it feels.
Help!
This is all somehow too feminine. Buck up, young man.
I don't want to die.
I tried.
Taking a measured swing, Doc rapped the man on the side of the head with the flat of his axe.
I know this may sound too chauvinistic to you, dear Mildred, but a man should always comport himself as a man and not whimper like a damsel in distress.
Come on, let's get this guy out of his armor.
They dragged the limp trooper across the floor, out of the puddle of nuke fuel, and began unbuckling his battle suit.
Looks like a pretty good fit for JB.
Other slaves passing by stopped to stare at what was going on. Some of them were smiling, while others looked concerned. There could always be mass reprisals for acts of rebellion. The companions again used strips of the trooper's underclothes to tie and gag him.
He's got the rash, too. It's all over his legs.
Nasty looking.
See all the little pustules? He's got a staph infection working.
Perhaps the hygiene of our otherworld opponents leaves something to be desired.
No, Doc. The staph is secondary, opportunistic. It moved into the lesions that were already there.
What are you going to do with him?
A slave pointed at the trooper, who was once again wide awake, but now unable to move and naked.
Why, buddy? We got something we want to show that bastard. Maybe we could borrow him for a little while.
The trooper looked terrified. His mouth moved behind the gag, but no words came out.
You can take him, but whatever you do, don't let him get loose.
Nah, we won't even untie him. You don't have to worry about that.
A couple of the slaves pushed over an empty cart, and then four of them lifted the bound trooper inside. A crowd of eight or nine then shoved the sledge toward the gloom at the end of the tunnel. An equal number of slaves stayed behind, unwilling to participate in whatever demonstration the others had in mind.
Guess that bastard's gonna get what's coming to him.
Ryan handed the guard's laser rifle to Jack. Then he took off his helmet and used an axe point to punch out more ventilation holes. When this was done, he addressed his comrades and the remaining crowd.
We're going to need a distraction up top, a major one. But you gotta wait until JB and I get close to the ore truck. Mildred, Jack, don't use the pulse rifles up there. Not yet. Stay inside the mine entrance and keep the weapons in reserve. The invaders might shut down the road if they see that we've armed ourselves. We can't let them do that before JB and I reach the camp and disable the manacles. If we're gonna win this fight, we all need to be free to move.
How are we going to know when the cuffs are turned off?
Chances are we aren't going to be able to signal you. You're just going to have to figure it out by yourselves.
We could always employ some of our less fortunate brethren. After all, what is a hand or a foot more or less to a dead man?
Plenty of recruits for that duty.
Jack took hold of Ryan's arm and pulled him aside. He indicated the foot-deep hollow the laser beam had cut in the wall and the puddle of glass drippings on the floor beneath it.
See?
Yeah. The glass's melting temperature must be relatively low. It could work to our advantage.
Indirect fire with the tri-barrels.
You got it. Don't waste your shots on the battle suits. Their EM shields will protect them. Make the landscape work for you. After we leave, once you and Jack get started out here, the troopers are going to call for help. You can expect enemy reinforcements from Slake City.
Road and air.
Afraid so. You've got to capture as many weapons as possible before that happens. Arm yourselves and the other slaves.
Understood.
Also,
Jack bent down and picked up a baseball-sized hunk of glass. He tossed it up and caught it with the same hand.
Non-metallic. Not bounce off EM shield.
The team turned to the group of slaves.
Tow this at battle suits. Not use axes.
JB makes a striking trooper, doesn't he?
The armorer stood there in full body armor, still wearing his sweat-stained fedora. Under his arm, Doc held the matching helmet, which he'd already pounded holes through. From behind, it looked like a monstrous cheese grater.
I know how attached you are to that well-seasoned headdress, John Barrymore, but it will never fit inside this bubble.
My lucky hat.
We know, JB. Let Dean borrow it for the time being.
Shit. Well, you take good care of it, boy. I'm going to be wanting it back in the same condition it was lent.
That good, huh?
Dean accepted the fedora. It was too big for him. As he mashed it down on his head, Dick style, it flattened the tops of his ears.
Spitting image.
Give me the friggin' helmet.
Your new lucky hat.
Once the armorer's helmet was screwed down, he and Ryan started for the mine entrance. Some of the milling slaves ran ahead of them, but most lagged behind, as if their deactivated armor still had some protective capability. By the time they reached the top of the mine entrance's slope, the insides of their visors were fogged with the heat of their exertion. The condensation limited their vision, but it couldn't be wiped away without taking off the helmets, which wasn't an option. They stepped out into the bright glare. Ground Zero's routine had resumed after last night's disturbances. A dozen guards stood around the Kleeglite perimeter. Two troopers checked the loaded carts as they lined up by the ore wags. Another trooper supervised the loading of ore by hand.
One guard manned the water tank, making sure the slaves got only 1 8-ounce cup for their toil. The slaves who couldn't work lay curled up in the dimples. Some were undoubtedly already dead. Nearby, healthier slaves roasted their fresh-caught mid-morning snacks over the propane burners.